You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR. Now here are your hosts, Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm.
Hello there and welcome to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, and the kid in studio. What's up, the kid?
I'm looking to get back on track to my over, the adjusted over-under is now 11, but we're looking to see if we can hit that. Things are good. Cleveland is rocking again. And, you know, hopefully it'll catch on in this building, and maybe next year we can be celebrating a Super Bowl.
Cleveland is indeed rocking, which is good to see. Now, one thing I will say I'm a little disappointed by is that Charlie Sheen put it out there. He wanted to come out full Rick Vaughn, wild thing to throw out the first pitch. The only better idea I heard than that was the duo. Actually, I suggest this, the duo of Rick Vaughn and Leibs, and have like Leibs throw out a ceremonial first lime while Rick Vaughn throws out the first pitch. I think that'd be unbelievable.
See, I thought
it would be pandemonium.
I understand why Charlie Sheen, for who he is as a person, and is not going to be the guy that throws out our first pitch, but I'll be very honest. The same way that you come across, how cool would it be to have the outfield bullpen open up, the haircut shaved into his back,
yes,
the music blaring,
wild,
and him walking and walking through the outfield. I mean, 39,000 people at Progressive Field would go bananas.
Fontana, can you play Wild Thing for us?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Tell me when you've got it ready.
I can pull it up right now.
Okay. All right. I mean, it would be, yeah, people go bananas. And I know Omar Vizquel's a legend and Kenny Lofton's a Cleveland legend. Albert Bell
is throwing out the balls.
I don't know, but I'm guessing that's.
Well, let me tell you, Albert Bell will not be throwing out the first pitch.
Joey?
Joey himself will not be here. I don't know. It just seems like it made so much sense. You know, there's no reason that it doesn't happen. I'm not sure who will be throwing it out, but it will not be nearly as exciting.
No. No, I just think this was like a glorious opportunity to have like a serious moment. Like, I mean, what could top this? If you had him come out, the place would go bananas. Like, it would come unglued.
Well, I was listening to a really big show, and they said two other likely names could be that were thrown out there, I think via Twitter, were LeBron and Jim Tomey. And then Riz went in on LeBron on how unathletic he is as a baseball player, not really being able to throw that gracefully and or hit that gracefully, going back to, you know, he said like 10 years from taking some BP with the Indians. So
he thinks that would make him
But LeBron just had his hype-up moment, what, in game two of the ALCS?
And it's kind
of
like, LeBron,
and I'm not trying to say he had his moment, but it's like.
And also, LeBron's busy that night.
Right.
He's playing a game. I mean, listen, like if the gates are just open and this guy walked out, people will go absolutely bananas. Like, I would want to be. Fontana, am I wrong? Would you want to be a part of this?
I am 100% on board with having him do it. Just, could you imagine it? Just this, it almost like wrestling.
In the starter jacket?
With the glasses?
Hang on, I'm going to restart.
Skull and crossbones and the lightning bolts on the side?
Picture yourself this. You're sitting here and be like, you're just sitting there, you're enjoying some popcorn, and you're just kind of sitting there, and everything goes dark on the Jumbotron for a second. You just hear this, and you turn, and the bullpen door opens. Like, that'd be the greatest thing ever.
Like, this has been gifted to them. He even sends out the tweet asking for it. Charlie Sheen himself saying,
I've been denied, correct?
Sources saying yes.
Sources say they're not going to do it. But, like,
what, Drew Carey?
If Drew Carey throws out the first pitch, that'd be disgusting.
And the other thing, too, is, like, the Indians can do this without, you know, they can say, hey, political messages aside, we know what Charlie Sheen has done and, you know, whatever. We just want to do this as a fun homage to the
I would say, what about Tyronn Lue and maybe the Big Three? Like, all throwing out ceremonial first pitches as, you know, the last team that brought a championship to Cleveland only 4 months ago, 5 months ago?
I think it's going to end up being some, like, dolt, like, politician or something stupid like that.
Could be Stipe.
That would be cool.
It would be cool, but there, nothing could touch this. This would be an iconic Cleveland moment. I mean, Major League for a long time was like, it is an iconic Cleveland moment.
When you think Cleveland baseball.
Absolutely, you think Major
League. Major League is in the mix of one of your top moments.
Most definitely.
I mean, Pedro Serrano, I hit straight ball very well.
Come on, not so much.
Like, everyone, we hit a home run in the first game, everyone gets, you know, free Kentucky Fried Chicken or something. Like, let's sell it.
Let me tell you, they better be selling free electric blankets. It's going to be cold out there. I was chastised by Nate for saying that I would only go to the game if I could be in the heated section.
I mean, come on. Now you're going, this is why they called you grandpa in college.
No, it's not. I have no
It's the same reason why you said that Vegas is a young man's town now.
Well, I don't disagree. I mean, I hear what the kids say.
And let me tell you something. And I think I know Matt Wilhelm pretty well. Matt Wilhelm is not going and sitting in the bleachers on Tuesday
What did
night.
I say? What did I say? When I talked about even Friday night, I go, there's two things that Matt Wilhelm doesn't like. Matt Wilhelm doesn't like cold. Matt Wilhelm doesn't like wet.
That's right.
Being wet or cold.
I think you're going to be both tonight.
It's supposed to let up a little bit around right about now. It's supposed to let up.
Okay.
But it's going to be breezy, which is going to play a hand in special teams.
This is why
golf advice. What do you do when it's breezy?
Swing easy. Tell your kicker to swing easy.
When it's breezy.
This is why I enjoy the NBA playoffs more than, amongst many other reasons, than baseball. But like the NBA playoffs, it's 70 degrees outside, you're walking outside in short sleeves having a cocktail
and going inside,
and I'd like to see them play the NBA finals outside and the Major League Baseball finals inside. That's what they should do. They should switch stadiums for the playoffs.
Come on, man.
What an outdoor basketball game is what you're calling for the NBA finals?
Don't you believe that these guys all grew up playing in the playgrounds outside?
I would imagine they've all played basketball outside.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you want the NBA finals decided on like a wind gust moving a free throw or three?
It'd be interesting. It'd be very interesting. More so than anything, I want the baseball playoffs moved inside. More than basketball, they could stay inside. But baseball at this time of year does not need to be played. I'm looking at the weather right now. The low for Tuesday is 41 degrees. Is that
what's the high?
52. It's not going to be the
high.
What's
Wednesday? I think I'm going Wednesday.
Well, I'm going to my couch on Wednesday.
I'm going with the guy who should be throwing out the first pitch.
Todd Derry should be throwing out the first pitch, folks.
He should. He should be up. He should at least have enough say.
Oh, Wednesday is going to be 56 in a warm low of 49.
Perfect.
It's baseball weather.
In March, you'll be saying 49. It's golf weather.
Yeah, but you're moving around a little bit, not just sitting there. Waiting in between pitches and, baseball's not a sport to see in person.
This is why I disagree with you. When you are in a playoff baseball game or that kind of atmosphere, which you're going to be in at Progressive Field, it's the energy of the crowd. It's the intensity of every pitch. It's the hum. It's like it has that big fight feel on every pitch, especially in the ninth inning of a close game.
Third inning when it's.
If somebody hits a home run, it's pandemonium, the kid.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're buying into the hype a little bit. If you're really
I watched
honest.
That whole last game. I watched every pitch of it. I was riveted. Playoff baseball is exciting. The rest of the season, you don't need it.
It's dramatic. There's a difference between drama and excitement, in my opinion. Maybe it's exciting
drama
to you.
Drama causes it's the stress, the tension. It's that makes you feel alive.
Right, but like to me, the feeling and the excitement of LeBron chasing down the layup and blocking that cannot be matched by the drama of baseball. Yeah, it's dramatic.
Okay, so it's 3-2. The bases are loaded in the bottom of the ninth. You're up 3.
Not exciting to me. It's exciting, but not as exciting. Basketball to me is a more exciting game, as is football.
A game, yes, overall. But moments, I think baseball can produce some very dramatic moments. Wilhelm,
dramatic,
what do you think?
Yeah.
I'm on,
and I'm not a huge baseball.
Neither am I. I've watched more baseball. I've watched the Indians. Every game of the Indians is as best I can. Every inning that I could be home and watch it, I have been home and watching it. So if I've been at practice and with the game that starts at 4, I get home and I catch it in the bottom of the fifth and I watch the remainder of the game. So I've watched the most baseball probably in the last 5 years of my life over the last 2 weeks watching the Indians in the playoffs. That's just the truth. And I do find myself hanging on every pitch. And I think every inning that you dig deeper into the game, the tension and drama
that
just increases.
That is absolutely true. It is like a crescendo. It is building. And – What I'll tell you, what I've enjoyed, because I haven't been just in front of the TV because these game times of 4 o'clock.
They're terrible.
Whoever told some Major League Baseball to start a game at 4 o'clock, genius marketing. But listening to Hamilton on the radio, to me, now that's great.
Right.
He tells us he's whatever the saying is that's escaping me now, but he's telling a tale.
Spinning a yarn,
thank you, of the story and the game. I mean, he's great.
He is great.
And I actually think that baseball is better on the radio than on TV. I do. I think baseball was meant for the radio.
I just think that the one thing that I love about baseball, and I always will, and I'll even say, and I'm not exactly, I think it was the eighth inning or maybe even the ninth when, you know, the Blue Jays doubled in the ninth. I think we had one out, guy gets a double. You know, and then the next batter comes up. That game can go from 3-0 to 3-2 with one swing, and you can't essentially say that about basketball or football, where it's like one action, you know, one shot can almost change the entirety of a game. You know, one throw can change the entirety of a game. So it's just, and I mean, think about how dramatic or how tense. Because I was like 3-0, I would have loved the insurance run, you know, that we could have gotten the top of the ninth to get the 4-0, you know, with I think Lindor's double, if I'm not mistaken, that went off the wall. But I'm like, how much would I, you know? But it's like, if they swing go to 3-2, I go, yes, we still have the fact that they've got one more game in Toronto and then two more in Cleveland, but the likelihood of them beating us is so small. But it's like you want to take care of business right now.
Yeah. What's the other thing that's cool about it is in basketball or in football even, there's a clock. So, like, you know if you're
up. Yeah, so I know I'm not going to be sitting there for 7 hours watching a baseball game. Did you watch those NLCS games the last two nights?
No. Have you watched your college football games that take 4 hours?
I'll watch college football for 12
hours. I'll throw this in there. Is I have watched a little bit of the NLCS just simply because now that the Indians have clinched – And it is a tight series, and everybody wants Chicago, and I want to understand the team we could potentially play in the World Series. If you have no vested interest in baseball, it is extremely boring.
Absolutely.
Like, I couldn't name, if you wanted to, Clayton Kershaw, and I'm spent on both teams. No, naming a name from either the Dodgers and Rizzo. That's probably only
because you're friends with Rizzo.
Actually, I know Orlandis Chapman, too, the kid they traded from the Yankees,
Still playing for the Dodgers?
That's it.
Yeah. Well, this is what I say, and this is why I think, to me, college football is my favorite. I can sit down and watch, and I will watch part of the BYU-Boise State game last night. I could watch almost any college football game.
Yeah.
In baseball, you can't do that.
This is what I was going to say when I was talking about the time before you took it in a completely different direction, the kid, is that if you're watching a baseball game, and let's say that you're down 5 in the bottom of the ninth, you still can win that game. If you're watching a football game and you're down 5 touchdowns with a minute left, the game's over. Like, baseball is never over until it's over. It's almost limitless in that way.
Yeah, you could say that, but the reality is there are times when it's 5-0 in the ninth.
Didn't somebody do a crazy comeback against the Giants? Like, wasn't that a crazy ninth inning, 5-run comeback?
Yeah, I mean, once in a blue moon. But
right, but it's possible.
But it's possible you could come up with a football game where a team gets like 3 onside kicks.
But here's the other really cool thing about college football that is unique to college football, and it is every time there is a top 25 matchup, and I'll say maybe a top 15 matchup, especially at this point maybe through 3 to week 3 to week 6 or 7 is when you're still a bunch of undefeated teams and one loss teams. If you lose, you're out. And you can't say that about an NFL season because, you know, teams can – just yesterday we had Jeff Hobson on. And he goes, the Bengals hit it 2-4. They were 3-5, you know, in 2014. And they come back and run 7 of the last 8 off, and they go to the playoffs.
Oh, yeah, I love them.
You know, but it's like if you're sitting at 2-4 right now in college football, you have to basically run the table to go to – the TaxSlayer.com bowl on December 21st.
You mean like Sparty?
Like Sparty, yes. Exactly. So that's the one thing that I love about college football is the drama of the rankings, and you can't trip up. And you look at the Buckeyes of last season. You know, we didn't bring our A game against Michigan State's backup at home, and we were the by far and away the better football team and got beat and did not play in the national championship game or even the college football playoff.
I know.
For that reason.
I still say that is one of the most, in all my life of watching football and seeing how bad you killed us and seeing, yeah, they beat us, but like we were basically even with them. I don't know how you guys lost that game.
I don't either. It was D'Antonio's defensive game plan.
Even still, I mean, that was just one of the weirdest results.
It's a shocker.
But, you know, the funny thing is it's possible you guys win the national championship this year, you won it 2 years ago, and your best team was last year.
Right.
Possible. I mean, obviously they didn't get it done in the field.
I mean,
field,
you could have gone back-to-back and had a chance to get a third. With the least experienced, least talented football team that you could say on paper.
Well, least talented is hard to say. I mean, you guys
of
have
the three teams.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's certainly shaping up to be a fun third Saturday in November this year, Wilhelm.
Not scared.
Not scared. All right. When we come back, we will talk a little bit about Browns, obviously. This is Cleveland Browns Daily here. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, the kid. We got our picks for the week. We have got Dane Brugler at 2 o'clock, Hugh Jackson at 1:30, plus your phone calls. Call your shots today. It's Call Your Shot Friday. Can the Browns go down and shock the Cincinnati Bengals there in the Natty, where the Browns, last time they beat this team, was in the Natty in 2014. We got the Friday forecast, so lots to do, lots to talk about. Call us up, 216-578-0850 on CBD.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, and the kid in studio. We're very happy to be joined right now by the number 32 overall pick in the 2016 NFL Draft, Browns rookie defensive end, outside linebacker, Emmanuel Agba. Emmanuel, welcome to the show. Let's talk about it. First sack. How did it feel?
Definitely feel great. You know, it's just to get it out there. You know, but, you know, he kind of, Mariota, you know, was a real fast quarterback, one of the fastest in the league. You know, it's kind of like a shoestring tackle, actually.
Because he tried to, like, to spin on me, and I just grabbed him.
And you grabbed him down. He tried to get away from you. And was that, like, something, was that something that's been eating at you a little bit? I mean, you had a ton of success getting to the quarterback in college at Oklahoma State. You're used to having sacks probably every game rather than the other way around. Was that something you'd been thinking about? Like, I just got to get that first one, and then to finally get it, did it kind of, was that a little bit of a relief?
Yes, for sure. You know, that's why I was drafted, you know, come here and produce sacks. And, you know, it kind of like kept bugging me. I need to get one. But it's just good to finally get that out the way. So,
Emmanuel, being critical of yourself, watching film with as much as you're playing right now for the Cleveland Browns, what is the one thing that you see week after week that you've improved upon each and every week going into this season?
My pad level, I felt like I've gotten better. My pad level, that's the key thing I needed to work on, and I felt like I've been staying low off the ball, you know, staying under the offensive lineman, so that's been the key.
When you get this, you go through and you go the week before against Tom Brady. You were right there three times.
Yeah.
Almost got him. Is that, what's that like when you're that close and then you see, oh, quick, the ball just gets right out?
It's definitely very frustrating, you know, just getting there, and not being able to get the sack. But, you know, all I know is I'm affecting the quarterback, you know, giving the DBs a chance, you know, either get a pick or, you know, just hitting the quarterback is always giving our defense a chance. So.
In a game like that, being a young man like yourself, knowing how long Tom Brady's been in the league, and I'm sure you knew about him before you got to the NFL, when you're in the game, is he just another guy?
Oh, yeah, definitely. He's just another guy, you know. But, you know, before the game, you were like, wow, I've watched this kid go.
It's Tom Brady.
He's my favorite player, you know. But, you know, it's definitely during the game, he's a regular player to me, you know. Just got to get after
him. Did you say anything to him after you hit him that one time in the back? You got him pretty good?
Oh, nah. At the time, you know, we were down, you know, I was just wanted to make a play, you know, just help the team out. So, you know, I didn't really say anything.
Okay. All right.
I've asked you this question before in our, our play review after your sack, but just talk about the dynamics of the defensive line room. You know, Danny's playing at an extremely high level. You've got Carl Nassib, who, you know, everybody that we speak to from the locker room has their own Carl Nassib story because of the, you know, the different bird that he is. But then, you know, you add in Xavier Cooper and Stephen Piatt. Everyone kind of has their role. Just talk about the dynamics of that group and your ability to go out and collectively have your best performance of the year each week.
Oh, man, as a D-line, our main goal is just to help the team win the game. And Danny's played a big part of it. He just comes off the ball and destroys those centers. And we also need that from Danny. And also, you know, the vibe and the chemistry between us is really good. And we have a veteran leader like Steven. He comes in. He's kind of a more chill guy. You know, he just comes in, you know, tells us, you know, he's real smart. And he tells us, hey, what to look for and stuff like that. So we have a really good relationship between us.
What's the biggest difference now that you're six games into your NFL career between, you know, a big time Big 12 football game and the talent that you're going against and rushing off the edge in the NFL?
Oh, hey, I'm not a rookie anymore. You know, this is a real deal. This real deal is playoffs. We're fighting to get to the playoffs. So, you know, I just got to tell myself, just keep calm and collected. You know, it's every game is a very, very big game. You know, just got to go out there and do what I got to do to win.
Do you find that, you know, in college you could just dominate because of your size, of your speed, of your athleticism? And in the National Football League, it's got to be a combination of that. Everybody's got that probably if they're in the NFL. And then the technique. Has that been kind of a big change for you, just how important technique ultimately has to be?
Oh, yeah, technique is very important. It's not like college where you could just either
you just dominate somebody.
Or dominate somebody, but, yeah, you got to have that right technique because all the guys you're going against is probably like vets, and they've seen everything, so you can't just give them anything new they haven't seen before. So
we've spoke to you a lot of guys about, you know, Hugh Jackson as a motivator, but if you walk outside these walls, you've got the Cavs that would have won a championship. Mm-hmm. The Indians are in the World Series on the cusp of another potential championship. Is that a motivating factor for some of you guys to be the other main franchise in this city of believing in Hugh and wanting to go out each and every week and prove so many people wrong that things are heading in the right direction?
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, seeing the Cavs win the championship, now the Indians are in the World Series. You know, it's a very good motivation for us. You know, they're doing their part. It's up to us to do our part now. So that's how we see it.
I imagine you rookies that have come in, a lot of you from big-time college programs, probably have never lost six games in a row at any point in your life.
Oh, yeah, never. That's never happened to me. It's just new to me. You know, that's why I have to do whatever I can to help this team win games.
To turn it around. And then another thing I want to ask you about is when you're a pass rusher in the NFL, if you play, let's say you play 60, 70 snaps a game, okay, mm-hmm. or we'll call 50, whatever it is. If you get one sack a game mm-hmm. every game and get 16 on season, you're going to be a Hall of Famer. You know what I mean?
Yes, sir.
So you are working hard to try to get one sack a game, and that puts you as, like, the premier pass rusher in the NFL.
Yes.
So you're going to fail a lot more often than you succeed. Do you find now in the NFL versus college that a lot of the game is strategy? You're kind of setting something up, and is that something that's been a big change? Kind of, you can't just rush the same every time. You have to set them up, and then try to hit them with, you know, yeah. the change up. Is that kind of from a mental approach? Is that very different?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And, you know, in college, sometimes you could just beat a guy just to beat a guy. But in NFL, you have to set him up. If you don't set him up, then he's going to stop. If you keep using the same play, same move every time, he's going to just stop. But you have to set him up like either you can set him up with a bull every time and just finesse him on the next time, and you could get him by that.
And it's got to be – it's an interesting thing, though, you know, when you really think about it, that yeah. success as a pass rusher is, you know, if you did what you did last week once a game,
yeah.
that is makes you the best in the league.
Yep.
And, you know, so a lot of time you're out there, and I know that you take a lot of pride in what you do with the run, and it seemed like their game plan early was to run DeMarco Murray mm-hmm. left, right at you,
yeah.
and you guys stood up to him pretty well, and I think that the run defense has been really one of the bright spots so far this year. Do you take a lot of pride in stopping the run as well as getting that quarterback?
Oh, yeah, most definitely, Coach. Coach Horton just stopped. We got to stop the run first. We didn't stop the run. Let them beat us throwing the ball, you know, and we do something about that, so.
My last question for you is just overall, collectively, how has the city of Cleveland, you now lived in Cleveland or in and around the Cleveland area for, you know, 6-7 months now mm-hmm. and the season has started, but how has the city kind of, you know, taken you in or treated you? Is there any restaurants you enjoy or hangout spots, or is it just kind of like, you know, being kind of behind closed doors with some of your teammates?
You know, they love the Browns football. You know, we get a support everywhere we go. You know, every restaurant we go to, everybody's showing their support. Hey, y'all just keep fighting. We know we're young players. You know, it's just the motivation that we see in the fans' eyes. You know, hey, they support us. Hey, we got to pick this up. We got to give them
right.
a win. You know, we have to bring a championship to the city. You know, that motivates us to be as good as we can be. You know, even better than what they expect us to be. So.
That's great.
What's your favorite spot to go to in Cleveland?
To be honest.
Well, this could be an endorsement deal for you, Emmanuel. Yeah.
To be honest, I haven't really got to really experience, like, any, like, known restaurants. But, you know, like, I stay in, like, just around the facility. So, yeah, I don't really have any favorite spot yet.
Okay. Okay, in the off season, you'll get your first, like, you know, real off season as a veteran after your rookie season. Have you bonded with anybody on this team? Anybody become kind of like your boy here on the team?
Definitely Derrick Kendrick, the safety. Yeah. Uh-huh. Actually, we started off as roommates during when we first got here.
Okay.
Rookie minicamp. Then also, we're also roommates when we go to away games and home games. So, yeah, I definitely think we're bonding. Yeah, that's my boy.
Nice. Do you guys play any Madden? Is there a little competition there?
Yeah, we play Madden. You know, I think I'm up like 2-1 right now.
Okay.
2-1 right now, yeah. So I think we got another Madden game coming up.
Or you could just retire and say he can never beat you.
Oh, I could do that.
You could walk it. That'd be my friend Vince Conti would pull a move like that. Emmanuel, congrats on the first sack, first of many, and hopefully we'll be able to congratulate you on your first win here with the Browns sooner rather than later.
That's it. Thanks, all right,
good luck down in Cincinnati. That's Browns outside linebacker, defensive end, does it all. Quarterback harasser, Emmanuel Agua with us here in studio. When we come back, we'll hear from the head coach of your Cleveland Browns, Hugh Jackson.
I've been counting on my steps, on my nose just turned to yes.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Dog Pound, tune into News 5. That's the new name of News Channel 5. It's just News 5 now, folks. Turn into News 5 every Sunday morning at 11 to get the latest behind-the-scenes news and information about your Cleveland Browns and get ready for the game. It's the best Browns countdown show in town, and it's called Browns Countdown. It's 11 o'clock. Every Sunday on News 5 with me, Nathan Zagura, Andy Baskin, Matt Wilhelm, and the top dog, Hanford Dixon. We have the latest live from the field. All you need to know to get ready for your Browns Sunday. And this week when they take on the Bengals again, tune in 11 o'clock every Sunday morning for News 5's Browns Countdown. Let's go to the podium now and hear from the head coach of the Cleveland Browns, Hugh Jackson.
Did those guys run prior and Hayden?
Oh, yeah, they tried to move around today. They did. Mm-hmm. So is it? No. I guess you can assume that. Yeah. Yeah. We'll see. We'll see where we are on Sunday.
Hugh, with the injury to Joe and Burley being down and Howard going to safety, do you need to make any moves at corner?
We might. You know, might need to.
Kind of yardage game that Cody had last week, that has to give you confidence to perhaps even increase the amount of the different plays that he might look at this week then, right?
Well, yes and no. You know, the plays are decided based on our game plan. So, sometimes things have come up that way and get a chance to make plays. I don't know if we're going to look at any different plays. We'll do whatever we think we need to do to win the game.
Talked to Joe and he said, "Hey, if you can't run against AJ Green, you're pretty much you're out of luck, so to speak. If you don't have Joe on Sunday, obviously that's a pretty big concern. But how do you compensate for that loss when trying to shut down a guy who's
find a way? You gotta find a way. I mean, that's what it comes down to. If he's not able to go, I mean, he's the next man up, and we gotta get it done. You know, that's part of it."
What your emotions will be like Sunday when you're out on that field that you spend so much time on and looking across it.
Right. I appreciate you asking, but this is not my first rodeo. You know, it's not the first time I've been someplace else and gone someplace else. And so I've been through this before. This is a game we're trying to win. So the emotional part will be, like you said, there's a lot of memories there, great memories there. But at the same time, you know, they're trying to beat our team, and we're trying to beat their team. So I'm sure there'll be some high fives and handshakes to people who have meant a lot to my career. But, you know, we're there to play a game, and that's what we're focused on.
Thank you.
we talked to Coach Horton about Danny Shelton a little bit, but we haven't talked to you about him lately. Just how do you see him coming along? What do you think of his development this year?
Improving, getting better. Has played extremely well the last about 3 weeks. And I think he's getting better, you know, every day. Understands the demands of his position and what's expected, and starting to meet those demands. And he's doing well.
When you can have a dominant nose, what does that do for the defense? How does that change?
It's tough. You know, the way they have to block things, you know, is different. He will force double teams where normally you wouldn't have to double team. So he's been very disruptive, you know, in the middle of the line. He needs to continue to do so.
Eifert plays for the first time this week. How does it change their offense?
He's a good player. I mean, anytime you get good players back, it always changes your offense or defense. He's a tremendous competitor and catch the ball, make plays. It's a matchup issue. You know, there's a lot of things he can do. So, but he hasn't played football in a long time, you know. So, again, you know, they probably will stick him out there if he's able to go. But, you know, he's got to go play.
All right, that's Hugh Jackson there addressing the media. We do now have the official injury report for the Browns for this week against the Cincinnati Bengals as well as the Bengals. For the Bengals, Tyler Eifert put in a full practice. He is officially questionable. That is the only person on their injury report this week. That's a little bit different than your Cleveland Browns. For the Browns, cornerback Marcus Burley is out with a hamstring injury. Wide receiver Corey Coleman out with his hand injury. Tight end Seth DeValve out with a knee injury. Josh McCown out with a shoulder injury. That's four of the inactives that we know going into Sunday. Burley, Coleman, DeValve, and McCown. The rest of the injury report goes as follows. Joe Hayden listed officially as not practicing today. He is doubtful.
And
which
doubtful is
means
less than 50% chance
less
to
than
play,
25.
Correct? Less than 25.
Basically,
so he's not going to play.
He's not going to play. Yeah. The last time somebody played when they were listed as doubtful was like Antonio Gates 4 years ago when people went berserk. Like,
right.
You're not supposed to play. It's supposed to be a 25% chance. So he is expecting it. So that's your fifth guy probably out for the Browns. Of list that is questionable this week, Xavier Cooper put in a full week of limited practices. He's questionable with his shoulder injury. Randall Telfer, who's been out for a while, ankle injury, limited. He's officially questionable. And then the big one, obviously, Terrell Pryor. He is limited, put in a limited practice today and is questionable. So that's a good sign that he may be able to go. Carl Nassib is not listed on the injury report. He's ready to go. Jamar Taylor put in a full practice today. He's ready to go. And Joe Thomas returned to practice, put in a full practice today. He's not listed on the injury report either for the Cleveland Browns. So it looks like five guys will be out that we know of for sure.
Yeah, and it's disappointing because, and something that, you know, you and I talked about on the game preview that you can find on ClevelandBrowns.com or the Browns mobile app in regards to Joe Hayden and the matchup with A.J. Green. And something that I'll continue to talk about, you know, today and even on the Browns Radio Network Sunday, getting ready for the football game as well as Browns Countdown, is you've now got a shot basically play a corner, whether it's Tremont Williams, Jamar Taylor, and I don't think anybody's going to be shadowing A.J. Green at this point unless they want to shadow him, and that safety then has to find A.J. Green, which means the other weapons for the Cincinnati Bengals now become the focal point of the offense if we're going to double A.J. Green and not let him single-handedly beat us. You know, you talked about Tyler Eifert having a full week of practice. We heard from Jeff Hobson yesterday talk about Tyler Eifert. He's back. Will he be the guy that he was last year with Hugh Jackson as the offensive coordinator? I don't know yet, but still it's a threat. He's going to occupy a safety. We're starting Tracy Howard at safety. You got Brandon LaFell. And if you talk to, the Boyd kid,
Tyler Boyd.
You know, Hobson was really, when I kind of brought up the question about Mohamed Sanu and Marvin Jones, he's like, their numbers are better.
Yeah.
Their numbers are better. And so that is something that scares me going into this football game.
Well, and you look at it, and let's just call it what it is. Joe Hayden has basically had the number of A.J. Green, and we'll go ahead and take a look at this. Is courtesy of our friend John Costco from Pro Football Focus in the matchups of A.J. Green and Joe Hayden. Since 2011, the second meeting in 2011, 4 targets, 1 catch, 41 yards, 5 targets, 3 catches, 82 yards and a touchdown. 2013, 5 catches for 41 yards. 2013, 1 catch for 3 yards. 2014, 2 catches for 23 yards. 2014, 3 catches for 23 yards. Joe Haden has locked him down. Now we go back and we take a look at the 2015 season. Joe Haden did not play against him in 2015. Four catches for 53 yards in the first meeting. Didn't hurt you. Second meeting, 5 for 128 and a touchdown, where he really started to turn it on. But Joe Haden has had A.J. Green's number. The guy's been over 50 yards receiving against Joe Haden once since 2011. He not any time since 2012, yet in 2015 did it both times against the Browns, including a game where he had over 100 yards and a touchdown. That is a big loss. And you're right. Not only is do you question, are they going to be able to contain A.J. Green? Then you wonder about the back end. This is now a secondary, okay, that is going to start the following people. At safety, free safety, undrafted free agent Tracy Howard, Derek Kindred or Ibrahim Campbell. So either a rookie fourth rounder or a second year fourth rounder.
And they've been going both back and forth, which have both showed their flaws.
And both of which have gotten benched at times for giving up the deep ball and biting on play action.
Correct.
Then at cornerback, you've got Jamar Taylor, who's been your best corner so far this season.
But was not good enough for one other team in the NFL.
Yes, but he's come here and he's been good. But you like him as a number two. You feel better as
right.
than as your number one. You've got Tremont, who is at
one
this
step
point,
away from every play.
Right, which is, again, not good enough in the National Football League. And then you've got another undrafted free agent in Breann Body Calhoun, who's actually played pretty well. Teams just aren't attacking him.
Correct.
So your secondary now has a guy that was you traded, got acquired on the seventh round of the draft day, which is turned out to be good. Tremont, an aging veteran who, you know, at this point in his career is, you can tell that the instincts are there, the recognition is there, but he did get an interception last week. But at times, you know, his foot speed betrays him as age goes on. You've got two undrafted free agents, one at corner and one at free safety. And then you've got either a rookie or a second year, fourth round pick at free safety, like strong safety. That's why this secondary, this back end, I think has been tough. And, you know, I thought it was very interesting when Emmanuel Ogba said to us, Ray Horton tells us we've got to stop the run. If they're going to beat us through the air, they're going to beat us through the air. Well, when you are one of two teams that's given up multiple passing touchdowns in every game this year, I guess it's, do you want to be like nicked away to death or do you want to be run over?
But what do you do? You're missing your start. I mean, 50% of our starting defensive backfield going into the season is not playing this week. One being Jordan Poyer after a lacerated kidney, now on IR, and Joe Haden, who's missing his third football game of the year, potentially.
And let's be clear, it's not like that was the strength of the football team to start.
Correct.
No, and well, you got to remember, you had Justin Gilbert, your former first-round pick that you'd hoped grow into a larger role. You trade him to the Steelers. He hasn't even really played for the Steelers other than on special teams. You had Kaywan Williams, who was one of the better nickel corners in the league.
Did he get picked up anywhere?
No. He got picked up by Chicago, failed a physical with them, and that's
that. That was his ankle, yeah.
Yep, so that's that with him. And it just hasn't, you know, you haven't had Joe Haden as often as you would want. It's been a lot of turnover and a lot of turmoil in that backfield, but at the same time, you can't let people continue to throw the ball over your head.
No.
You're not going to win no matter how good you're doing against
them. And I'll be very honest with you, there's no excuse for that. And I think that's where, you know, if you read into what Ray Horton talks about, and I know he doesn't, you know, have that kind of explosive personality, but you heard the frustration in Hugh Jackson's voice when talking about letting guys get behind you. You just can't do it. Because I think in today's NFL, that is the easiest way for you to score touchdowns. If you make a team work and go on a 10-play, or I'll say an 8-play-plus drive, the odds are in your favor defensively to stop them at one point and at least limit them to a field goal. But if they throw the football down the field, in today's NFL, it is the wide receivers are good enough to – the quarterbacks and wide receivers are good enough to complete that pass, and or the odds are not in your favor as a defensive player to be able to do it without getting a flag. So two of the three, I mean, a completion or a penalty are in the favor of the offense. So you have a 33% chance. So your ability to throw it, that's why teams want to throw it down the field. That's why Hugh Jackson, when he got this job, when asked by, you know, the media or us about forcing the football, taking 5 to 8 chances a game, because good things happen. Quarterbacks have the arm to throw it out there. We have the weapons in Corey Coleman and Terrell Pryor to be able to get out there and do it. And with a limited role of Terrell Pryor and no Corey Coleman, we can't do that. We can't take those shots and take that 66% chance and put it in the favor of our offense.
No, and that's why I think, to me, yes, you need to be able to do both, but now that's why it's incumbent on guys like Emmanuel Ogba. You're going to have to do a lot of just straight four-man rushes, drop seven into coverage, and make it difficult for people to have big windows against
right.
you. But when you rush four, you've got to be able to get there. When you can, like the New York Giants team that beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl because their front four was so good, you can have a lot of success. When you can't get home with four and you can't cover on the back end in one-on-one situations, that's when you have problems. The Browns, I mean, the stat to me that is the craziest, it's 10 straight games. Whoever's caught the most passes on the other team has scored a touchdown against the Browns. 10 straight games. That's crazy. A wide receiver scored a touchdown in 11 of the last 13 games. They've given up multiple passing touchdowns, I believe, in 10 of the last 12 and in 8 straight games. That's the longest streak in the NFL. The only other team in the league that's given up multiple scores through the air every game, the Detroit Lions.
I think what this just screams out is that if not one of our ones, definitely our twos. There's got to be in the first three rounds, you got to have at least one corner and one safety drafted.
Yep.
I think next year, you've got two firsts and you've got two seconds. And I think two of those four, you should allocate to your second year. Malik Hooker out of Ohio State would be a great free safety in this scheme.
And he'd probably be available mid-20s.
Yeah, either late first late, or maybe with that first
correct.
Pick of the second round.
Right.
That's kind of guy that I think you need to address this position significantly. And that's, you look at it, and if let's say the things – if you had all your druthers, and you never know. So let's say you re-sign Terrell Pryor, you've got Corey Coleman. So you feel good about your top two receivers. Lewis goes on. You're pretty okay there. I think maybe you can draft a move tight end in the third, fourth round.
Right.
O-line help, you should be able to – I still continue to throw assets at the offensive line there.
Through seven. I've said it. The good teams, that's where they get their linemen.
Out of those first four picks, if you could come away with one more good pass rusher from either the D-line or the edge, a quarterback, a free safety, and a corner – I think you've added a lot to your team.
And I know why people love the idea of Garrett or a big-time pass rusher. I think you got to just let the guys we have right now. It's not our biggest weakness between Ogba and Nassib and Nate Orchard.
Cooper and Shelton and Orchard. You've got a lot of investments.
You've got to let that marinate a little bit. You got to get defensive backs. You got to get on the defensive side of the ball. You need help on the back end first. And I think I would rather have a guy like that, as great as Garrett looks like he's going to be. Is that the guy? Yeah, Miles Garrett. As great as he looks like he's going to be, that's not – you can't use that. The Browns need –
if you could get Von Miller, you're taking Von Miller.
If Von Miller was playing on our team, it wouldn't matter.
I think it would. I think it helps you get to the quarterback.
It helps you get to the quarterback if your coverage guys can't cover. Some good offensive line is going to get a scheme – And give your guys
time.
So
who are you going to say, like Jamal Adams from LSU or Jalapeno Peppers?
The problem, and I love Jalapeno Peppers, but I don't think he fits he's not a pure cover guy. We need a cover guy in our defensive.
So the best guy supposedly this year, we'll talk to Dean Brugler about this. He's coming up at 2 o'clock for a nice transition, but I believe is the guy Jalen Tabor from Florida, who's a mid-first round. There isn't that kind of a
That's
corner
perfect.
This year.
I mean, that would actually be perfect. You get your quarterback, and then you get your corner. If you got corner,
and then Malik
and
Hooker.
And then your safety.
Malik Hooker reminds me of like an Ed Reed. And in this defense can cover the field.
Yeah.
We need that. We need
ball
that
hawk.
Center fielder, ball hawk.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to – and I know we've talked about it ad nauseum, but I don't know where Peppers, if he fits in as a linebacker or a safety, and coverage is his one weakness. So I don't know that he really fits what we're looking for.
Okay. All right. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll wrap up our first hour. 216-578-0850. Call us up. Then at 2 o'clock, Dane Brugler will be with us here on CBD.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, and the kid here in the Dog Bowl in Berea. Guys, last night, obviously, for the Bears, Brian Hoyer knocked out. But I got to tell you, watching that Packers offense, let me just tell you, stick a fork in Jordy Nelson. He's done. D-O-N-E. Not good for my fantasy football team. In any of my leagues since I have him in all three, but he is done. And I think actually for them having, instead of a bruising running back, having that pass catcher, Ty Montgomery, helps their offense.
I was just going to say, watching that having a guy that wants to hit the hole right and has to have a hole works against the mentality of an offensive line like Green Bay's. It's the same reason why they shield block for Aaron Rodgers to allow Aaron Rodgers to be shifty in the pocket and move around. When you saw Ty Montgomery,
what does that mean? Just for the layman,
what do you
shield
mean?
Block.
Shield block. Just keep like basketball blocking, keeping your body in front of another body instead of like trying to mow these guys and push them one way or another and funnel them one way. They're just kind of like body blocking. They're good athletes up front, and I think the same way that Aaron Rodgers moves around in that pocket, the run game looked just like the pass game, where they would, again, shield block and stay in front of guys on the offensive line, fire out a little bit of course in the run game to get a little bit of push. But Montgomery was just kind of like waiting and waiting. It looked almost a little bit like David. I don't want to say he's David Johnson, but I meant Pittsburgh and the Cardinals blocking scheme. They get a body on a body. They get a little bit of movement, and those good running backs just read things and get out in space. And Ty Montgomery, with his speed, was able to just hit a hole or bounce a run, doing it in 10-yard chunks and an 8-yard chunk and a 6-yard chunk, whereas Eddie Lacy is like the more it took him a little bit longer to get to some of that space.
Lumbering.
I mean, Ty Montgomery, I think, is a star waiting to happen. I've thought that since he came in the league. And now I think we're going to see it in the next 10 years.
You're saying that because you just picked him up on your fantasy.
And I drafted
team.
Him 2 years ago, if you remember, also. And I made a call, and you laughed at me. And granted, he stunk that year because he had one good preseason game that year, a couple of his rookie year also. All kidding aside, though, it looks like he, like you said, it fits their offense better to really go into almost like a two-minute. It's like having your third down back in there at all times.
But the one thing that scares me about Aaron Rodgers and that offense is, and we'll get back to Jordy Nelson, is first of all, they don't throw the football down the field not nearly as much as they used to. You look at last night's, yes, Aaron Rodgers set a record for, you know what, number of completions in Packers history.
Dinkin and Duncan,
But Dinkin and Duncan, for Montgomery to have 10 receptions essentially out of the backfield,
yeah.
You know, there was nowhere else to go with the football. Rodgers doesn't throw the Jordy Nelson can't get behind anybody anymore.
He can't even get off the line of scrimmage.
Right. You know, so Randall Cobb had 10 receptions. I mean, Devontae Adams, it wasn't like Devontae Adams, all he was doing was acting as if he was running down the field, shaking somebody,
back.
And just coming back to 10, 12 yards, and then he'd make the first tackler miss, and it turned from an 8-yard gain into a 17-yard gain. He did that 13 times. Do the math. That's 133 yards.
Yeah, I think that the Packers are done. I don't think that they're very good.
They're not good.
You know, they were playing the Bears last night. I don't even think they're going to sneak in the playoffs.
And I think Rodgers, for the first time, to be critical of him, he whimsically throws the football just to get it out of his hand fast. And it's his wide receiver hasn't yet won or separated. It's just like, this is where I should go with the football. Boom, throw it. And there's a lot of pass breakups. He's not as accurate as
his
he used to be.
His footwork doesn't
And I think
good.
His footwork looks terrible, and he's throwing off his back foot a lot.
All the time.
And relying on his arm strength, which is still good, and the ball gets there. But over time, that's who he's becoming, and his arm strength will start to wither a little bit. And if he continues those bad habits, he'll be, you know, continuing on this downward spiral that we all think he's already started on.
Yeah, I agree. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Dane Brugler, the kid. Get your questions ready about guys from the blue. And also, let's talk about the back end of this defense. How can the Browns get help there? What about these college quarterbacks? Did they all hurt themselves last week? DeShone Kizer benched. I think that's going to help him go to the draft, though. That was a thing that was an issue. I don't think it will be anymore. Dane Brugler next on CBD.